What I'd like to do this morning is sort of look at what is the essence of the spiritual awakening. What is its essence, and the essence of practice? Because, you know, when all said and done, with all the philosophizing and the great quotes from this and that and our ideas, in the end, it's how do we as individuals wake up and become that clear, full, open consciousness that all the great teachers have spoken of. I think in the end, that's what it comes down to. And many people have summarized that in many different ways, but I'd like to sort of frame it round one of my favorite quotations, which is from a Tibetan, well, it's meant to be from a Tibetan Buddhist teacher called Nyoshul Ken Rinpoche. Tibetan Buddhist scholars debate whether it was really him or not, but it doesn't matter. Those of you who want a name, it's Nyoshul Ken Rinpoche. Anyway, the quote is, "Rest in natural great peace. This exhausted mind, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves on the infinite ocean of samsara." So I said again, rest. Rest in natural great peace. This exhausted mind, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves on the infinite ocean of samsara. Samsara, the root meaning of samsara is to wander on endlessly. We are all wandering on endlessly in life, from one temporary satisfaction seeking another one, just wandering on in life, looking for that ultimate lasting satisfaction or just another temporary satisfaction. That infinite ocean of samsara wandering on, and we're just beaten helplessly by it. Helplessly, there's like, it's just coming at us the whole time. Helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts, beaten helplessly by karma and neurotic thoughts. Karma, in this sense, is not the way people sometimes think of it, you know, my sort of checkbook in the sky of how well I've done and how well I've treated other people and what's coming back to me. The original meaning of karma, the root meaning, is just action, doing in the world. And I mean, we are so busy doing. I mean, our lives, most of us, is taken up by doing. An occasional meditation here or there, and a bit of lucid dreaming, but the rest of it is doing. I mean, it's just getting more and more and more doing. Just the amount of things we have to do, to take care of, to think about, to worry about. And then, you know, and now we are in the information revolution where computers are meant to take over a lot of our doing for us, make life easier. I can remember back, way back when computers were coming along, I was involved in the early days of computing, and everybody was talking about the leisure age, or as they say in America, the leisure age. The leisure age, when computers would do all this stuff for us, we'd better sit back and enjoy life. You know, those were the days, you may remember, some of you who are old enough to remember, when if you wanted to communicate with somebody, you wrote a letter by hand, and you stuck in an envelope, and you went and looked up the address. You actually went and looked it up, you wrote it on, you stuck a stamp on it, and you went and posted it, you know, and you waited, and maybe a few days later you got the response. You know, those were the leisure years. Now, you know, someone sends you an email, and you haven't responded in a couple of hours, and you've got a text saying, "Did you get my email?" It's like, "Yes, and I've got 50 other emails, and I've got this to do, and I haven't checked Facebook yet. You know, give me a chance." You know, if we went through a list of all the things we have to do each day, we'd feel exhausted right now just looking at the list. And this is what it means, beaten helplessly by karma, all the things we're engaged in and doing. You know, no, it's no wonder we're exhausted. And then on top of that, as it said, by our karma, beaten helplessly by karma, and our neurotic thoughts. I need to emphasize the N on neurotic, because I was talking about this once in a workshop, and several members of the group misheard my English and thought I was saying erotic thoughts. I mean, that, yes, and a lot of our erotic thoughts are neurotic thoughts too, but I mean, if you look at it, 90% of our thoughts are a total waste of time. I mean, some of them are great. I'm not, you know, I don't downgrade thinking. Thinking is wonderful. Being able to think about things, analyze, plan, all that stuff, learn. It's what makes us human beings. But we don't need to do it 100% of the time. You know, I think probably 10% would be great. And if that's why we meditate, obviously, to get out of that thinking mind. But, you know, if you look at your thoughts, you know, as one scholar once said, 90% of them are repeats. They're things you've thought before, you've worked it out before, but, you know, it makes us feel safe to think about it yet again, just in case. Or, it was such a good thought, we enjoyed it so much, let's just play that thought back again and enjoy that one. Or planning or worrying. I think it was Mark Twain who said something to the effect, this isn't the exact quote, he said something to the effect of, my life has been full of disasters, most of which never happened. I mean, just, you know, ask yourself, how often are you worrying about things that might happen that actually never actually do? And I almost think the sad joke about human beings is, ultimately, when you analyze it, all our thoughts, all our worries, everything, our planning, our remembering, whatever it is, the bottom line of all of that is, how can I be happier? How can I be more at peace? As the Dalai Lama once said, in the final analysis, the hope of every person is simply peace of mind. That's what we're looking for ultimately, is peace of mind. How can we be more at peace? And the sad joke about human beings is we are so busy worrying about whether we're going to be at peace in the future, we're never actually at peace in the present moment. It's sad. Because all this thinking takes us out of what that quote says, what Neo Shaw Ken says, is natural great peace. And this, I think, is what all the teachers around the world throughout time have been pointing to, is there is a natural great peace. Not just the peace of, everything's okay, I'm feeling peaceful. It's a positive quality, the great peace, great peace. It's what the word ananda means in Sanskrit. It's often translated as bliss, but the root meaning is different. Nanda means joy or contentment. I prefer the word contentment. It's like everything is okay, there's contentment. And ananda, when you put the long A in front of a word in Sanskrit, it means great. So ananda is great contentment. And to me, that is what we're looking for all along. It's looking for great, deep contentment, deep peace. And as that quote says, it is natural. It's the natural great peace. It's our natural state of mind. And by natural state of mind, I mean the state of the unperturbed mind. The mind that is not worried. And I think it is completely natural, but we're hardly ever there because of the fact we're so beaten by karma and our neurotic thoughts. We so seldom taste that natural state of mind, the unperturbed state of mind. And it, the way I think of it is, if everything is okay in our world, if, you know, we're fed, we're not sick, we're not, the temperature's right, there's nothing, if we're safe, if we're safe in the world, everything is okay, our physical being is in a safe place. There's no threat to our physical organism, its survival or well-being. If everything is okay in that world, we feel okay inside. It's just a natural thing that we, if the world is okay for us, we feel okay. And that to me is completely natural. There's nothing hedonistic about feeling okay. Feeling okay means our world is okay. We're safe. There's nothing to worry about. And then, you know, then something comes along. There's some, I mean, it gets too hot or something. You know, we change clothes. Or we're hungry. We go and eat some more food, whatever. So when there's something off in the external world, then we feel off inside. We feel discontent. And that discontent is the completely natural motivator to go do something, to put the world right, to, you know, take off some clothes or whatever it is, or eat food. That discontent is the motivator to do something in the world to return to that natural state of peace. And so the way it should be is, you know, we're at peace, and then something comes up, and we attend to it, and we come back to being at peace. Something else comes up, we attend to it, and we come back to just resting in natural great peace. That's how it should be. But we humans, I mean, we're different. Maurizio forgot to mention that we actually share a spiritual teacher at the place where we live. A great spiritual teacher. His name is Sri Bruno. Sri Bruno is a dog. Wonderful, loving, wise dog. And Sri Bruno spends most of his life in natural great peace. And I suspect any of you who've got pets will notice that your pets also spend most of their life in natural great peace. Something comes up, the dog sees a deer, and Bruno is out of natural great peace. There's a deer, there's a turkey. Chase, go. Or where's my dinner? But most of the time, other animals are not stuck in thinking, worry, doing. They're at peace. We human beings, we get caught up in all this thinking, doing, worrying. And I think it's partly because we've got this belief system almost taught into us at birth, which says, if you're not happy, do something, get something, change something, be somebody. Go out there, change things. And most of the time, the reason we're not happy is not because there's something wrong there, it's because our little mind is going away, telling us all the things we shouldn't be happy about, what we're going to say to him, that tweeter, if we ever met him. All, it's just going on and on in our minds. We're creating discontent the whole time. And as if you look at your thoughts, most of them about how do we, how in one way or another, can we actually allow ourselves, help ourselves come back to being at peace? But what our thoughts do is, first of all, they take us out of the present moment. Because if you look at all your thoughts, in one way or another, they're about the past or future. I mean, they may start off about the present, like, oh, isn't this nice? But then, isn't this nice? How did I get here? How can I be back here? What's going to happen? It's like so easily our mind just slips into the past or the future. But also it's our thoughts that are the root of so much of our tension. If you look at your thinking, I mean, first of all, when we have a thought, normally the mind gets focused. The attention gets focused on what it is we think is important, what it is we need to do. And that focusing of the attention in itself is tiring, is exhausting in a way. I mean, just you probably all experience this. I mean, when you just stop thinking for a moment, just stop thinking for a moment now. Just pause. You know, whatever it is you're thinking, just pause. Do some of you notice that sense of what I call great relief? It's like, you know, when we do that, we can just begin to recognize just how exhausting all this thinking is. Just, here I am, here I am. And that natural state of mind is really one of just being, just being. We're just resting in being. Being just means what is. Being is, it is. The being is what is, without any interpretation, judgment, planning, excitement, worry, whatever. Just being. And the first person expression of that verb, the third person is what is, it is, this is what is. And the first person expression of the verb to be is, I am. I am. Although I like to drop the word I, because it gets us into so many spiritual, philosophical conversations about, is there an I, what is the I, is there a real I, da 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 da. If we drop that, then we could say, the first person experience of being is amming. Amming, it's a verb. It's not a thing, it's just amming. And when we just drop back from our thinking, we just come back to being, which is just coming back to amming. Amming. Experiencing this. And then we're at peace. We're at peace in that. Until some little thing comes along, but we're back in that state of peace. I mean, another neat encapsulation of this comes from Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, which are, in a way, one of the several cornerstones of Indian teaching, Indian philosophy. And I expect many of you know the first line of the Yoga Sutras is actually the second line. The first line is, here begins the teaching on yoga. In these sutras, just as an aside, when you hear the word sutra in Indian thought, sutra means thread. You know, we have it in English, a suture. When you sew up, an operation, you put in sutures. Sutra means thread. And the sutras were given as threads of meaning. This was before there was any writing, let alone internet or anything. 2,500, 3,000 years ago, the teachings were given as threads, very, very compact threads that people could remember, just a few words, and then you unpack the threads. And that's the teaching comes out of unpacking the threads. And the first thread of the Yoga Sutras in Sanskrit is Yogas Chitta Vritti Nirodha, which is usually translated something like, yoga is the ceasing of the whirling of mind stuff. Mind stuff is what is going on in the mind, our experience. The whirling of mind stuff, that going round and round, the whirling of mind stuff is our thinking mind that's whirling around. Yoga, its root word means to yoke, to bring back to oneness. I think it's often misunderstood as getting oneness. You know, yoga is becoming one with the Supreme, one becoming one with God, becoming one with pure consciousness, as if it's becoming one with something else other than ourselves. I prefer to interpret yoga as the end of separation, the end of separation. The separation has come from our thinking. Because if you look at all your thinking, in all that thinking, there is a sense of an individual I, the ego mind, a character in a story that you're looking after, the character that is related to this body. It's all just a concept, an idea, but there's this character you're looking after. And in that, there is the separation. We separate the world into this body here that needs looking after, navigating through the world, and the rest of the world which we are navigating. And that is the essence of the separation that occurs. So the ending of that sense of separation comes from Nirodha. I say it's translated as ceasing often, which leads to, if you look at old Victorian scholars translating the Yoga Sutras, it's like, we must stop the thinking. I mean, there's a yoga school I go to sometimes, and across their t-shirts is emblazoned their translation, which says, yoga is the restraining of the thought waves of the mind. We've got to stop the thinking, we've got to restrain the thought waves of the mind. And, you know, that's an approach. You can do that, and after, you know, several years of practice, you realize you haven't been very good at it, and so the teacher will say, I told you it was difficult. Try harder to stop the mind. Whereas Adyashanti says, you know, if you try to beat the mind will win every time. The thinking is going to come up. It's how do we step out of it? The word Nirodha means no longer growing, no longer sprouting, no longer sprouting. When the thoughts are no longer sprouting, then there is the end of separation. It's the thoughts that create the separation. When the thoughts are no longer sprouting, that is the end of separation. And then the third line says, then there is abidance in the true nature of the knower. Then there is abidance in the true nature of the knower. Then we rest in being. Then we rest in our true nature. We rest in knowing the Aming. And then, you know, other Indian teachings say, and what is the nature of the Aming? What is the nature of I, that self? It is Sat Chit Ananda. Sat Chit Ananda. Again, you hear this phrase many, many times. People even call themselves that by name. Sat Chit Ananda. Sat means, again, different translations, the truth, that which is unchanging, that which is eternal. And chit means consciousness, being conscious. You know, that, as so many teachers here and many places have pointed out, the fact that we are conscious is the one undeniable truth of life. And the nature of that is ananda. It is great contentment. So our true nature is of just unchanging, eternal consciousness whose nature is great contentment. And the how, that's the important bit, given all this. How do we do that? For me, it's come down to one word. Pause, just to pause. Pause the doing, pause the thinking, just for a few seconds, and notice. Notice what is. I mean, to begin with, we notice, oh yes, there's this, there's the birds, there's the feeling, my body. And then what else do you notice? Oh yes, there's a sense of ease, there's a sense of calmness, there's a sense of quietness. What else do you notice? Oh yes, here I am. Here's that quality of presence, the Aming, which is so seldom noticed because our attention is in all the doing and the being and our thoughts. But we come back and we begin to notice, ah, yes, here's that quality of being. And then to savor that, because that is what we are looking for. When we drop back into that state of being, we are essentially finding the goal of all that desiring. In the final analysis, the hope of every person is simply peace of mind. When we drop back into that, to actually savor it, it's like, ah, yes, this is what I've been wanting all along, to savor it and to love it, to actually love it, rather than just say, oh yes, that's peace, to actually positively appreciate it and love it. And that to me is the deeper meaning of really loving ourselves. It's loving that own, our own inner nature, loving our own being. And the more we can do that, the more motivated we are to come back to it. And in life, the stronger the memory of it, so that we can just choose to drop back into that at will. And I'll be doing some of that in the meditation in the morning, tomorrow morning, and we can talk about it in the conversation, and then we're going to have a panel on it tomorrow afternoon. So anyway, thank you.